Good morning. This is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM and streaming at WGXC.org. We broadcast from Accra, New York. I'm Victor Mandolia.
And I'm Debbie Mayer.
Sorry.
Right, here we are. I'm Debbie Mayer, and we're here during the pledge drive.
A little technical issues.
Live radio.
So we are here at the Hudson Studio. We're with Michael O'Hara, who is a member of the Citizens Climate Lobby. And we're going to have you tell us a little bit about what you're doing. Michael is also an alderman here in the city of Hudson in the First Ward. So we will be hearing from Michael shortly, but it is our pledge drive this session. High five! We are 5 years old, and we, for listeners of At Issue who listen to us regularly, we hope that you'll call in or go to our website and log in and make a contribution to the station. We operate here on a very, 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 very shoestring budget. We have only a few paid staff, and they are really in it because they believe in the station. And
also, give a high five to At Issue, because, Victor, you were one of the first radio shows, weren't
Absolutely,
you?
Absolutely, yeah. We were on from the beginning.
Yeah.
And so happy to be here as well. I mean, over these 5 years, we've brought so many different newsmakers and
Amazing.
People who have who really make a difference here in our area. Sometimes good, sometimes bad.
Right. And, yes, I was thinking that too.
But having this forum, I mean, this is unlike any other forum that exists anywhere mm-hmm. else in the media, where we can have a full hour to talk with people who will make the decisions or are working mm-hmm. Activists or. Mm-hmm. Political leaders that are the ones who really have the ability to change our situation, both on a global sense and locally, particularly locally, because these discussions don't happen in the local media. So if you are inclined and if you're able, we really appreciate you phoning in and or logging in, and not really logging in, but just going to our website. But you can call us right now at 518-697-7400, or you can go to wgxc.org/donate, and you can make a contribution there. And one thing to remember is that even a contribution of $5, $10, it really makes a difference. It adds up. Many, many people in our community can't afford to give $1,000 or $100, but if you can make a small contribution, yours on top of the other small contributions add up to a larger contribution. So,
absolutely. And remember, there are volunteers standing by to take your call to 518-697-7400, but you don't have to talk to anyone. You can just go to wgxc.org/donate and make your donation there. So please keep that in mind. It would be really nice if we could get $180 during the hour of At Issue, because then we'd be at a bigger even number.
Yeah, the tote board hasn't moved in a little while.
Yeah, it hasn't. So let's move.
You know,
it.
These things tend to happen toward the end. And what we'd like to see is so that we can get out of this mode and just talk to our guests.
Mm-hmm.
We would love for you to make those contributions now. We do have some premiums if you're mm-hmm. so inclined. If you want to just make a contribution to the station and have it all go to the station. It all goes to the station no matter what. But a few people and a few businesses and others have made some premiums available to you. So there is a $15 Moto gift certificate for a contribution of $30 or more. So mm-hmm. you get a little bit back, and thanks to the people at Moto.
Yeah, if you donated $30, then we'd be down to $150. So go on, Victor.
So come on.
Yeah, come on.
Just give us a call. We know a lot of you out there listen to us regularly. And if you would, you know, for those who appreciate what we do here, it also looks good for Debbie and I if we get some contributions during the show. Mm-hmm. So there's a... you know, the contributions would help right now. You can call in at
518-697-7400 or just go to wgxc.org/donate.
Hey, there's a really cool gift certificate. The gift certificate available here for all of you who are looking to get in shape like me, but I'm just really not as motivated as some of you maybe. But
what is that Crossroads?
Hudson Barbell CrossFit, which is down at the former L&B Chair Factory, mm-hmm. which is right
you can
behind,
ride your bike down
right
there.
Right behind Basilica. Yeah. They have a $100 gift certificate for anyone who makes a $150 pledge to the station, and that gets you essentials plus 1 week of classes, whatever that means.
Okay.
But you can find out there.
You can find out.
For a contribution of $150, you get $100 back in services from Hudson CrossFit, which is no small thing.
And people seem to like it there. I've never been there.
And the people who go there are like bulking happy. Up. I mean, it's amazing. They look great. So I guess it works.
Yes.
For anybody who makes a contribution, we have a bumper sticker.
Right.
That will help get the word out about
WGXC.org.
We also have at a $35 contribution, we have a WGXC tote bag for you. Mm-hmm. We have a Wave Farm baseball cap that is for a $35 pledge, and a Wave Farm sweatshirt for a $100 pledge. And Wave Farm, for those who don't know, is the parent of WGXC. It's our corporate entity that runs all of the
the programs and many different programs.
And
too.
I mentioned Moto before, which is, just so you know, is at 357 Warren Street, in case you don't know where that is. It's the big coffee shop down in that part of town.
Yeah, the coffee shop. They have a gift certificate.
And Hudson CrossFit is at 99 South 3rd Street is the official address of what is a huge factory with many, many, many businesses
down
there.
With many businesses,
there.
Yeah.
So we're going to introduce Michael O'Hara. Michael is First Ward Alderman here in the city of Hudson, but has also been extremely involved in a lot of environmental issues. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about. Oh, you also former commissioner of
commissioner.
The Department of Public Works here
right.
in Hudson as well. So you've been dealing with a lot of environmental issues. Tell us a little bit about Citizens Climate Lobby and what you're doing with that.
Great. Good morning. The Citizens Climate Lobby is a volunteer organization that focuses on getting a program in place in the U.S. and other places in the world that imposes a cost on fossil fuels, and the cost is applied to the amount of carbon that is emitted when you burn the fuels. Our initial proposal is to create a fee imposed on the beginning of the entry of these substances into the marketplace, at the well, at the mine, or the port, starting out in our proposal at $15 a ton of the carbon that's emitted when you burn the stuff. The further years, the amount charged goes up by $10 a year. So it starts out at 15, 25, 35, 45, etc. The cost, which is borne by the producers of these things, of course, will be passed along through the economy into whatever is being made or shipped or packaged by that energy. So every piece of paper, every piece of plastic, everything in our economy is going to be affected in some way. So this will very slightly increase the cost, and incrementally in years to come, of everything in our economy. Now, the other side of the equation, though, is that all of the money collected under that fee would then be redistributed to every household in the United States on a per capita basis. So you take in approximately, let's say, $800 million. You divide that essentially by the headcount and send everybody a check every month. For most people, most households, the majority of the effect of a cost increase in the fuels will be felt in the products, the physical products that they buy or services that they use, rather than an increase in the kilowatt hour price for their electricity or the gallon of gas at the pump. Just for example, a $15 increase in per ton in the cost of a barrel of crude oil would show up as about a 10 cent per gallon increase for a gallon of gasoline at mm-hmm. the pump. But for most people, the refund or rebate that they're going to get more than overcomes the cost increase of the goods and services that they use. So for about 60% of the U.S. population, they'll come out ahead at the end of the month. Mm-hmm. And
who comes out behind?
Pardon me?
Who comes out behind? Big producers or?
Yeah, the other 40%.
The not so much big producers, the higher income consumers, folks.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because for them, they consume more stuff. Mm-hmm. They're going to have, you know, two houses instead of one and three cars instead of one mm-hmm. and okay. so forth. So the more stuff that one consumes, which is generally correlated with your wealth, mm-hmm. The more the cost increase of the stuff will affect you.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
So has this been tried elsewhere?
Yes.
And who's doing this now?
The province of British Columbia in Canada has been doing this for many years now, and they have seen a benefit which is expressed in reduction in carbon dioxide emissions that can be measured in terms of activities from the province, mm-hmm. the different ways to measure that. And it's not designed in exactly the same way that we're expressing it. Part of it goes into other government programs that are facilitating energy efficiency, alternative energy, things like that. Mm-hmm. Our feeling is that because of the economic stimulus effect of giving people back their money, essentially, this will widely spread the benefit, because lower income people, when they get the benefit back, will spend it right away on whatever the heck they want to spend it on. Mm-hmm. So the economic stimulus effect is widely distributed as you can possibly imagine, and the general force that this is applying, what the economists would call a price signal, mm-hmm. is then put into the economy as a kind of a background issue. You don't have to say, oh, this particular product is more environmentally sustainable than that kind of product. Well, over time, one product is going to be less expensive mm-hmm. than the other, mm-hmm. as the manufacturers choose different ways to heat and beat and treat their product, to manufacture it, to package it, to ship it, mm-hmm. because they're all in the same boat.
Right.
They're all buying materials and paying to have them work done on them.
Right.
So those manufacturers that choose to respond to the signal, as they must, of higher prices for certain things than others, will go naturally toward the lower-priced mm-hmm. alternatives, which will increasingly tilt towards the lower-carbon-intensive products.
Right.
And so you and I won't have to be educated about the fine points of how a given
thing is
made.
This plastic versus cornstarch.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, right. because it will be the less expensive item.
Uh-huh.
People hear the term cap and trade. Where does this differ from cap and trade? Is it the same thing? Is it different?
The intentions are generally the same. These are both strategies that employ the marketplace to try and move the economy towards a lower pollution level.
Mm-hmm.
Cap and trade, however, uses a different strategy, which is to say to businesses, essentially, power plants and manufacturers and so forth, that there's a certain amount of carbon that we collectively in this country or state should emit, and you, manufacturer X and power plant Y and transit company Z, you get this amount of that amount. That you, this is your quota, and that's a cap. You shouldn't go beyond that, or else you'll pay a fine, and it will cost you more. So let's say you have two power plants, one coal-fired and one nuclear-powered. They both get the same quota, mm-hmm. but the nuclear power plant is never going to produce very emissions, much carbon right. dioxide. Right. They get mm-hmm. the same amount of pollution credit. So the coal-powered plant, in order to avoid the fine, buys the leftover credits from the nuclear power plant.
Yeah.
So that's the trade part right. of cap and trade.
Right.
This has been tried in Europe. It's also a already existing feature in the Northeast United States. There's a interstate agreement that has been in place, I think it's 10 years now,
mm-hmm.
And it can be effective if properly administered. In Europe, they decided to essentially give everybody a certain amount of credit to begin with,
mm-hmm.
and the price feedback loop never quite worked out, because in the midst of the economic recession, Russia, which was part of the trade agreement, had very little economic activity.
Mm-hmm.
So they mm-hmm. weren't going to bump up against their quota, so they had lots of credits to sell
right.
into the marketplace, and so the pollution levels didn't quite respond to that factor.
Mm-hmm.
Here in the Northeast United States, it was administered in a way that I think worked out better, and we here in New York State have benefited from selling our credits to some of the other states.
Mm-hmm.
Have actually made out pretty well in terms of reduction in pollution as mm-hmm. well as economic activity. So it can work out, but the problem when compared with something like a carbon fee and dividend that we're proposing is that it can be gamed. There are ways to mm-hmm. kind of rig a cap and trade system so that the pollution doesn't really go down, but all the companies
right.
trade their credits amongst
right.
each other.
So a lot of people made money, but there's no real reduction in
well, it's not that they actually made money. There's not a whole lot of – well, there are individual companies within a scheme like that
right.
can make out.
Right.
But it's whether it does the job.
Right.
I mean, we're not against
right.
people making money. If,
right.
If you can invent something that actually does the trick,
mm-hmm.
the trick being reduce the pollution output, then God bless.
Mm-hmm.
But if it doesn't and you're just having useless economic trading back and forth, well, then to heck with it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't make any difference.
If you're just joining us, we're with Michael O'Hara, who is a First Ward Alderman here in the city of Hudson and is also a member and an active member of Citizens Climate Lobby, which is working toward decreasing pollution and by imposing a fee on carbon at the point
at
of
the
entry
source.
To the
at
market.
The
right. right.
Okay.
Exactly.
And if you are also just joining us, we are in the middle of our pledge drive. We are 5 years old, and
mm-hmm.
here at the station, it's high five this time. We're calling
that issue is 5 years old?
I have a loose crown, if you see me.
Oh, dear.
Here.
Yes.
We're
all 5 years older than we were
yeah.
when the station first
and
opened.
5 years ago, I didn't have a crown, so it's not good. But
right.
But if you would give us a call here at the station, 518-697-7400, or go online to wgxc.org/donate and make a contribution to the station. You can keep hearing and listening to
all kinds of stuff, all kinds of
mm-hmm.
music, all kinds of talk shows. Yeah, can I talk a little bit about the auction, too?
Yeah.
They're having an online auction, which will turn into an in-person auction, I guess, on February 26th.
Mm-hmm.
So I got this email about it. So I thought, oh, yeah, okay, I'll take a look. And I went on, And on the left of the site was a list of artists whose works were available through this auction. So I think, who's this? And they had Lynn Davis on, who is a distinguished and marvelous photographer who lives here in Hudson. Mm-hmm. I love the work of Lynn Davis. So I got to click on this. So I saw the first thing that came up, I really, really wanted. So I have bid on it, folks.
Now you're going to get more people, and you're giving it.
I know,
it
but I'm not going to tell you anymore. I'm not going to tell you any more about it. Well, the value, I bid the opening bid, which for me was a lot of money. The value is higher. So I thought, well, at least I started the bidding on this thing. Yeah.
So bidding is going on right now.
Yes, it is. And, I'm sure if you go to the website, WGXC.org, you will find the online silent auction. Mm-hmm. It's done by Paddle 8. Now I get on Facebook, I get all these ads from Paddle 8. They think I'm a
that's what happens.
Big
think
bucks
you're a
person.
Art mogul.
Right. Yeah, so that's going on too. And that's fun.
So give us a call here at the station, 518-697-7400, or go online and do it yourself at WGXC.org and support radio in your local community, WGXC. 5 years old.
Right. WGXC Acre, 90.7. That's where you are. Okay.
So, Michael, tell us what the Citizens Climate Lobby does and what kind of reaction you're getting from doing
that. Yeah, and this is a national organization, is it not?
That's correct.
And so you're part of the local chapter.
The Columbia County chapter, which is also thought of as the 19th New York State Congressional District chapter.
Oh, okay, good.
Because we're organized by congressional district, and we have a chapter in almost every congressional district.
Super.
The membership focuses on two different things. The basic idea is to create the political will necessary to put this carbon fee and dividend idea into practice. The way that we go about that is by direct lobbying of our congressional representatives. That happens either in the district or in Washington, D.C. We have been going down to D.C. in June the last 5 years. That allows us as a group to make appointments with all of the congressional members. And the last couple of years I've gone down, and we form teams of people that are almost always composed of people from that member's district, but if we have a few from outside of the district, and we made appointments with every member of Congress. So over the course of 3 days, we saw every senator, every House member, and then back here in whatever district.
Or their rep, I assume sometimes you don't get to see the actual congressperson.
That's correct. The good thing about that, though, is that it's oftentimes better to meet with the rep, with the staff member, because they'll spend more time with you, and they're not as likely to be dismissive of new ideas. Right. The staff members are charged with vetting these sorts of things, and over time you get to know them and do the work. We have a very useful and interesting way of approaching these people. We don't berate them and say you're bad for not dealing with climate change. We compliment them on whatever work we can find to compliment them on.
Might be a tall order.
In some cases it's a tall order, but you do the best you can. So we research their background and their votes and what they've said so that we have something positive to say when we get there, and we educate them about what our proposal consists of and how the rep might move, however incrementally, towards a point of adoption of what we're talking about.
So activists out there could learn a little something here, because you compliment instead of punching them in the face and then saying, hey, why aren't you listening to me? Right?
Exactly. Exactly. And we're pleased to here in the 19th Congressional District, we have Chris Gibson. Gibson has been a champ in this regard among his Republican colleagues, because a few months ago he decided that we were kind of talking along the same lines that that his thinking is. He's a smart guy, and so he introduced a resolution that says essentially climate change is real, climate change is a threat, humans are largely responsible for it, and we ought to do something about it. And it has so far collected 12 co-sponsors among his mm-hmm. Republican colleagues. Mm-hmm. The resolution does not explicitly support what we're talking about, but it's a big step ahead
right. uh-huh.
of some of his colleagues who have stood on the House floor and said uh-huh. this is a hoax
right.
and
yeah,
this is
right.
this is a plot by, you know, the Red Army to take us over. So the step has to be appreciated.
Yes, so he didn't say a specific thing about what we should do. He said we should do something.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so
mm-hmm.
that's great. Mm-hmm. And we have to take
baby steps.
Baby steps here with these
really.
Guys. And you may
it's
notice
incredible.
That I said 12 Republican colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
Because the House is controlled by the Republican Party, we have to focus on getting Republican sponsorship for whatever bill is going to come up. And when we meet with the Democrats, we have to tell them to essentially sit on their hands right now, but be ready to support when this comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Republicans, in many cases, react defensively to any Democratic proposal.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
That's but we meet with everybody
right.
Mm-hmm. as best we can and nudge them little by little towards what we're trying to do. The mm-hmm. other way that we build political will is by letters to the editor, mm-hmm. Radio station interviews.
Mm-hmm.
The people that we have working with us are volunteers all, and we had a meeting actually just last night
mm-hmm.
in which we talked about ways in which we could work together on the upcoming 19th district election
mm-hmm.
for which we have a number of candidates, some of whom are very clearly in our side mm-hmm. regarding this.
I
and
wonder
others,
which ones those are.
Well, you can probably tell, but we can't ignore any of these folks
because sure.
you don't know who's going to win.
Right.
So
right.
all of them will be approached. All of them will be briefed on what it is we're talking about. And we will do our best to bring out to the public when we speak to them in public venues what it is that that is their attitude and opinion about this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you held a community meeting at the Opera House recently, I guess, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So tell us what that was for, and then are there more coming up? Or I mean, you probably don't have one planned yet, but is that the model?
That's
that
part
using?
And parcel of the developing the political will,
mm-hmm.
is to educate the public
mm-hmm.
about climate change, about our energy situation, and how each of us as citizens is responsible for learning about it and speaking up about it.
Mm-hmm.
The point of the Opera House open house event was to do just that, to educate people. And our speaker that day is a former high-level executive with ExxonMobil,
mm-hmm.
Who lives in Cooperstown now, and spoke quite authoritatively about the energy mix that we now have in the world, and specifically in the United States, and how that's changing over time. That makes it the right time to take action on this.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of fossil fuel extraction has gone up enormously. We have a moment in the retail pricing right now where certain fossil fuels are less expensive than they had been, but that's a factor of less demand because fewer people are working and driving and
but, and more
buying.
Production, no.
And more production,
right.
The combination here. But the from the producer's point of view, the reason why so many of the coal and gas and oil producers are having economic trouble right now is because it costs so much more to get the materials out of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
So conversely, the cost of alternative energy has come down enormously.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
The cost of a kilowatt hour produced by solar panels or wind energy has been reduced almost to parity with normal grid prices
mm-hmm.
huh.
for those outputs for those materials.
Mm-hmm.
So we're reaching a point right now, and actually this is part of the kind of a tipping point that we're also looking to take advantage of with the carbon fee and dividend. Because mm-hmm. if you're producing a kilowatt hour of electricity at 10 cents with wind energy, and the coal-fired power plant is producing it for 9 cents a kilowatt hour, well, if you raise the cost of a kilowatt hour of coal-fired mm-hmm. electricity by a penny, well, now they're in, now right. they're at parity.
And it's nearly yeah. there now, it seems.
Well, in many cases it is. A new coal-fired power plant, which is unlikely to be built, mm-hmm. but an existing coal-fired power plant can compared with a new wind farm, comes in at a higher price.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That the wind-generated energy is less expensive already than any of the fossil fuel alternatives would mm-hmm. be. And depending on where you are in the United States, the size of the installation in the American Southwest, large utility-scale solar installations are coming in at a utility price of 3 or 4 cents a kilowatt hour.
Wow.
Yeah.
So very low price mm-hmm. for something that doesn't pollute, that mm-hmm. lasts a very long time, that has no input. After you build the darn thing, mm-hmm. you just have to wipe the panels off once in a while, and, right. and it keeps on making electricity.
So Michael also wears another hat.
Yes.
You work for Lotus Energy here in Hudson, as mm-hmm. which is a solar installer.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you about what you think of this St. Peter's Hospital solar farm that's going to be built in Greenport. I think it's an important thing. And then I think one of the other things for a lot of our listeners is solar affordable? Particularly, I think for low and moderate income people, are there programs to help them get solar? Because I think many people in our community struggle with utility bills, but they also struggle with the idea of, like, how would I afford or be
right.
able to
and
put
they
solar on?
They may live in an apartment, and
right.
but they talked about that at the meeting.
So
yeah.
can you tell
right.
our listeners
sure.
a little bit about that?
Certainly. These are two...
Here comes the train.
Yeah.
yes.
Speaking of
these,
power.
These are two extremes of the marketplace for solar energy. The first mm-hmm. one you mentioned, where a hospital is getting credited with power generated somewhere else, in this case in Greenport, the power is physically being sent into the grid at one place, but by accounting, National Grid is keeping track of how much electricity is generated in one place, place A, and saying, okay, here's 10,000 kilowatt hours, and they have been instructed by the developer of this property to credit 10,000 kilowatt hours toward the usage of the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to have a very long extension cord that goes
yeah.
30 miles
right.
between
uh-huh.
these two places.
Mm-hmm.
It's just bookkeeping.
Right.
Bookkeeping.
So the two locations where the energy is generated and where it is credited to just have to be within the same utility. So
oh.
they both have to be National Grid.
Okay.
You couldn't put this installation, let's say, across the river in Central Hudson territory.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But aside from that, that's something that that can be done today and is being done in several different cases. It's just that the one popping up in Greenport caught our notice because it's local to us.
Right.
Yeah.
right. right. Let
but
me go to the other side of the...
Further out west, is a lot of these are being built, it seems like, in Schoharie, where there's a lot of land that's cheap, I guess.
That's correct, right. The calculation of where this is worthwhile has to do with a couple of different factors. One is, where can you buy or lease the land on which these panels are located mm-hmm. less expensively, which also has to be somewhat near a major power line.
Okay.
If you're way out in the country, the electrical grid system is not so much a grid as a tree, where mm-hmm. you have a trunk, limbs, branches, mm-hmm. and twigs,
I see.
Each of which is lower capacity as it gets closer and closer to the household or business that's using it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were way out at the end of a twig of the power system, you couldn't put a big power plant out there because the lines wouldn't handle
couldn't
the input
right.
of the electricity at that mm-hmm. point. So Got there's it. A few different factors at work there. But let me talk about the other way in which it has recently become possible to support people who want solar electricity, but who live in a house that's perhaps compromised by shade, mm-hmm. too many trees or other buildings around, orientation, perhaps the roof is sort of slanted north, or perhaps you live in a rented building or an apartment. Mm-hmm. These houses actually comprise the majority mm-hmm. of the U.S. housing stock.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Do they?
Most houses yeah. are not ideally situated for solar. Mm-hmm. So while I am a big proponent of solar, not everybody's property qualifies.
Mm-hmm.
So the Public Service Commission recently came up with a judgment in response to requests that says that a solar development can be installed someplace, and again, issues having to do with the size of the property and which way it's oriented, that the generating capacity from it can then be credited towards more than one other customer.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Because right now, that piece of property in Greenport has to essentially be owned, at least on paper, by the entity to whom the power is credited.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
And that really just applies to big organizations like a hospital mm-hmm. or a mm-hmm. private company. But if you and 10 of your friends wanted to take advantage of a solar installation, you could find perhaps a piece of property that one of you has title to and arrange to have enough solar capacity installed on that mm-hmm. for the needs of all 10 of you. And you could write a letter to your power company saying credit the output to these account numbers and you're done.
Mm. Huh. How
and
about that?
So the tariff is written in such a way so that you do have to have at least 10 entities,
mm-hmm.
off-takers of the
mm-hmm.
power.
Right.
These could be individuals or companies. So
people, neighbors on a block.
Yeah, I was
that's
just
correct.
Thinking,
If you had let's say a piece of land that one of you had that wasn't otherwise being productively used, well, mm-hmm. then go right ahead. So uh-huh. you'd have to figure out amongst yourselves mm-hmm. some way to buy the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps you'd all put money in an investment kitty mm-hmm.
uh-huh.
that you would use collectively to contract with somebody like Lotus Energy, who uh-huh. would be happy to sell you the mm-hmm. equipment. And then uh-huh. forever after, you credit the power, the power company takes care of the bookkeeping.
And I suppose theoretically, I mean, it could be a company that does power purchase agreements as well. You could lease the equipment, or
that's correct. Right. I mean, that's up to you.
Right.
However, you can afford to right. buy the equipment, then you go right. That's not part of the decision by the Public Service Commission.
Right.
Now, what is more likely to happen than 10 of us getting together and worrying about the administration of a power company is that entrepreneurs and existing companies will think of this as a new business opportunity, and mm-hmm. I think it is a big business mm-hmm. opportunity. There's already a company that has sent letters to property owners all over Columbia County mm. that have been identified by satellite photos as having the appropriate land on which to put this sort of installation,
okay.
a minimum of 10 acres uh-huh. that is oriented in such a way so that you have a clear view to the southern sky and near the power line and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And they've gotten a letter with a photograph of their land in it that says, would you please lease us your land for a certain down payment and a certain amount every month? And those property owners are thinking, well, you know, perhaps
just
there's something
there,
in this
right.
for us,
mm-hmm.
if the property owner is just keeping the land mowed and perhaps raising alfalfa, let's say, with a relatively low profit per acre,
mm-hmm.
the appeal of having $1,500 a year input, mm-hmm. profit, essentially, revenue mm-hmm. from that acre can be quite attractive.
Mm-hmm.
So we may, over the next few years, see some significant changes in land use throughout the region because of this opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be, I think this is the next big thing in solar because of the limit that we will reach in terms of the appropriately oriented household roofs,
right.
that here's a way to serve more people, to avoid more pollution, and I think this is going to be very important.
Mm-hmm. So suppose you did have a properly situated house but you were a modest income. Are there ways to make it work?
Yes. The state of New York recently amended their support systems from the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, NYSERDA, which gives a extra credit for low-income households to what they normally give to encourage solar installation. Right now, that incentive is based on the wattage of the system, the total installed wattage, at 40 cents per watt. So in a 10,000-watt installed system, you'd have, you know, 40 cents a watt. So that's a significant amount of money. The benefit for low-income people is to double that incentive. So instead of 40 cents a watt, you'd have 80 cents. So it reduces the effective price because the incentive is given to the dealer. And so the contract price that they would be facing is that much lower. The other factors are the relatively low interest loans that are provided by the state itself through NYSERDA, 3.5% on a loan, and support from the state in terms of a property tax avoidance, essentially, because normally if you put a new building on your property, your property would be reassessed at the value that you declared in your building permit. But you could put a $10,000 solar panel on your roof, and that does not increase your property tax. So the state has a number of different ways in which it supports solar power that for even a non-low income, a regular, let's call it, household income family, makes solar quite quite attractive when compared to staying, keeping on paying your bills with the power company.
Yeah.
So, again, we'll just remind our listeners, first of all, that we're with Michael O'Hara, who is a member of the Citizens Climate Lobby and is also First Ward Alderman here in the city of Hudson. It is High Five. This is our fifth year anniversary here at the station. We've been active and broadcasting for 5 years. We actually were in the station was an online broadcaster earlier, and but it's been 5 years of on the air here at Hudson. I mean, here at WGXC, and we're in the middle of our pledge drive. So please give us a ring at 518-697-7400. Or you could go online at wgxc.org/donate, or right on our website. There's a link there as well.
I haven't heard the phones ringing.
Yeah,
folks. And so I assume you've all been going online because you just, you know, it was still early for you, and you made your donation online.
So so give us a call here at the station or go online at wgxc.org and give us a contribution.
And support your station.
Also,
yes.
Check out our Facebook page. We post upcoming guests, and we post the archives of every show, and that's at facebook.com/@issue, all spelled out. And keep up to date with what we're doing here on the show. We only have about 10 minutes.
We've got 2 minutes. Talk about the city.
What's going on locally on in the Common Council? Do you see anything upcoming that will be of interest to our listeners?
The Common Council General monthly meeting was last night, and we dealt with a few different things, one of which was the construction of a ramp to allow less abled people to make it up to Promenade Park at the foot of Warren Street. This has been hanging on the agenda for quite a few years now. The steps that lead up to the park are not particularly easy to navigate if you're not a bit spry. So there's a lot of
and impossible if you're in a wheelchair.
Impossible if you're in a wheelchair. Right, exactly. So there were a number of design proposals presented, and a grant was applied for last year. The shame is that the grant was not awarded for this project, and the council, however, 2 years ago allotted $20,000 out of the budget, which has stayed in the budget up until this year. And one of the things we voted on last night was to instruct the mayor to go ahead with the project with the money that we have rather than waiting for a possible grant at some unknown time in the future. Mm-hmm. The less able among us will be happy to hear that they can move up the ramp at some point because the mayor will delegate the task to the Department of Public Works, who has a rough design in mind for construction of probably a wood-based ramp mm-hmm. of the proper incline to make a twist up the steps in order to get up there. So that's a very good outcome. Mm-hmm. There was a bit of discussion about the design mm-hmm. element, but in the end, the sense of urgency about allowing access won out here.
Right. There is a facility not far from the park, Providence Hall, which is for people who are over 65, or maybe it's 60, and disabled. And it is a big issue for them.
It's
their local park, yeah. And they have no access to it. And it's been a thorn in the side of the elected officials down there for a long time. I know when I campaigned for mayor, that was the thing that I heard most down mm-hmm. there. And people have been screaming about it for years, and they're tired of hearing that it's coming.
And you campaigned for mayor about 3 years right, ago,
exactly.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
okay.
It was a long time ago, mm-hmm. and it's been on the agenda for much longer than that. So
yes.
I think kudos to Tiffany Garriga and Abdus Mia, the aldermen from that ward, who have really pushed it through.
Yeah.
Right. The other resolution that we passed was also introduced by Alderman Garriga, which was a plea to our statewide elected officials to raise the level at which a person becomes called an adult mm-hmm. in the criminal courts. Mm-hmm. New York State, almost alone in the 50 states, refers to 16-year-olds
right.
as adults.
Really?
And then prosecutes and jails 16-year-olds in adult prisons. And there's only one state besides us that does that is North Carolina. So that's our company in this country,
right,
North Carolina.
Right. And nothing abans North Carolinians, but it's not something that a state should do for a number of different reasons, including the fact that 16-year-olds put in the company of adults in a prison have a lot more learning opportunities that would not necessarily be learning the right things.
Mm-hmm.
So the request is not something we can implement locally.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Hudson has no authority to change the level of how these kids are treated, but our collective suggestion and request will go on to our state representatives and the governor, and we hope that they carry out what we're talking about.
Some people may not know that the governor and the administration has just changed the population, or is about to change the population of the Hudson Correctional Facility mm-hmm. to only house juveniles, and they're starting to segregate the juveniles out of the adult population
mm-hmm.
statewide.
Right,
and yeah. right.
Hudson is going to be a part of that. In that, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. adolescents will be placed here rather than in other state prisons, and they'll
right.
be segregated.
Mm-hmm.
Step in the right direction, but mm-hmm. but really, it should be.
Well, how they're treated at the beginning of the process
right.
rather than just at the end when they
exactly.
go to jail. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's another good thing.
Now, I was a little confused. It was Carol Osterink on the Gossips of Rivertown had said that the council president had introduced something that everybody else voted against. She voted yes. What was that about?
It's a point of order, really.
Yeah, it was really a technicality.
It's a technicality
yeah.
having to do with at what point do you go into executive session. And John Friedman, Alderman John Friedman, who is also an attorney, pointed out that we shouldn't be going into executive session at all,
mm-hmm.
ever, that there's no excuse for a city council to do mm-hmm. that. However, that being said, the next question was, when should we do it? Because we read off the normal agenda at the beginning of the meeting, and then council president says it's time to go into executive session, and there were many other items mm-hmm. still to be dealt with, and the members said, well, all these people have come to listen to the rest of the meeting, and they're all going to have to wait out in the hall
right.
while we go through our deliberations in executive session. And we would rather put the executive session at the end of the meeting, as
right.
has been the case in years past. She stuck to her guns and said, no, let's have a vote about mm-hmm. whether to go into the executive session. And
right,
everybody
it is
voted.
Usually done by vote anyway.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be.
Yeah.
The proper procedure is mm-hmm. to have a vote about
a
whether to do
and
it
vote.
And how to do it and so forth.
Right.
So normally it's not an issue, but
right.
in this case, everybody voted against doing it at the beginning.
Well, any of us who have attended these meetings and watched executive sessions happen, that they always last longer than they say they're going
to.
I mean, it's all
yes.
been, you know, and
right.
once they get in the room and it's and they start arguing or discussing, it always goes longer. So it sounds like it was the right choice.
Right. She told mm-hmm. me later that she thought that it wouldn't occupy very much time. It
yeah,
would
but
be 10
she's
minutes,
not done it
bing,
before.
Bing. Well, that's correct. She's new at this. And as it happens, it took much more time.
Did right. it really?
Yes.
Yeah, when you finally
so
did.
Luckily,
like,
there were
okay.
only four or five people who were standing out in the hall by then that mm-hmm. When we came back in to actually take a vote mm-hmm. on the issue at hand, then, you know, it didn't disadvantage anybody.
Right. Well, maybe she's learned something from that. That could be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the people went out ultimately because
that's
you know,
correct.
People who show up for these
and,
meetings
and,
are
and
there
we dealt with the other issues for which there was an audience as mm-hmm. well as the videotaping that was being done, which
right.
would have had
right.
to take their camera down and move out into the hall.
Yeah. Oh,
the,
that's ridiculous!
And,
yeah,
and dear Dan, who does the the taping, is doing it out of his
the
own
volunteer.
As a volunteer, he doesn't get paid for this.
Kudos mm-hmm. to Dan Udell
yes.
and Mary Udell, who schlep
all the equipment to the meeting every time
and are such dedicated community service. Mm-hmm.
And videotape
people.
Every meeting,
right,
folks.
Which
so
is available,
it is available.
On MH Cable TV on Friday evenings.
And now on YouTube.
And now on YouTube as well.
It's great.
Good.
We've got just a minute or two. Any last thoughts?
How's the legal committee? Speaking of laws.
Legal committee has...
Michael is the chair of the
I'm the chair of the legal committee. Legal committee has some things to take up. In particular, the mayor conveyed a document to us last night that asks for a change in the zoning code to allow for the construction of the proposed hotel, 35-room hotel,
mm-hmm.
down on the property where the StageWorks
mm-hmm.
building
street.
Is, Cross
yeah.
Street,
uh-huh.
exactly, which would obviate the need to get a zoning exception because there's a wrinkle in the zoning law that says a boarding house or a B&B is okay, but a hotel is not.
Yeah.
Oh.
It didn't specify it in the zoning, although that was clearly the intent. Of
right,
it.
Exactly. It wasn't clear enough. So it is the mayor's intention, and I fully agree with it, that we ought to clear the way for what is likely to be a very positive addition to the neighborhood.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We're almost out of time. How do people get in more involved with Citizens Climate Lobby?
CitizensClimateLobby.org is the national website, and you can sign on there, which will then send a message to your local chapter, whichever mm-hmm. congressional district. Anybody listening to this is probably in the 19th
yeah.
congressional district.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the easiest, most universal way to get involved.
Okay.
CitizensClimateLobby.org, and you
That's
can read
easy.
All about the proposal, read all about what various citizens are saying about it, and learn more.
Great.
Okay. Thank you.
And any other community forums coming up? Or I'm sure you'll announce, but there's nothing planned right
Not
now.
Not that's on the schedule today,
okay.
no.
All right. Mm-hmm. Super.
But thanks for asking.
Okay. Okay, they're starting to move us out here.
So listen, it's the High Five Pledge
yes.
Drive. Please give us a ring, 697-7400, or go to WGXC.org. For now, this is At Issue, Victor Mandolia.
Debbie Mayer.
And we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
Take care.
Bye.